Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
It's brand new Season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland, and today I've got a special treat. I am joined by Ashley Esqueta. Please tell me I didn't butcher your name.
You didn't.
Hooray!
Great news.
Yay. Ashley is my buddy from CNET, and she and I are survivors of the great war known as CES 2015.
Yeah.
We can be beaten down, but never defeated.
No, never. Never.
So, Ashley, I've asked you on the show so that we can kind of talk about some of the stuff that was unveiled at CES, some of the big themes that happened during the show. And this is going to be a real discovery for me personally, because I was confined to a very small, relatively speaking, section of the show and didn't get out nearly as much as I wanted to. So
I was in the same boat. So I got to see via all of my colleagues out reporting what they were looking at.
That's kind of how I was, too. Except for me, it wasn't colleagues. It was peers, because no one else from How Stuff Works was there. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but it was still, you know, one of those events where every single year that goes by, you can identify some big trends that happen at CES. So for a few years ago, like an example, a few years ago, it was 3D, right? That was the big thing.
And fortunately, that has gone away.
Yes, people have finally given up on pushing 3D. I think listening to the consumers say, "I don't want that," for two or 3 years, finally got the message through.
Oh, it's just such a hassle. I mean, it really blows my mind that anybody ever thought that was going to be a really lucrative business model, because I can't think of a single person who's like, okay, I want to buy this 3D TV, and I also want to buy these $200 pairs of glasses that run on battery power, and oh, I'm going to need four of them because I have a family of four. Like, there is not a universe in which people enjoy that.
Yeah, I mean, the only use case I really could see was for gamers who had, you know, a lot of, you know, disposable income, and they wanted to have the ultimate gaming, you know, console set up where they were going to play in 3D.
Even then, it's like, buy a monitor.
Yeah.
Like, play Steam. Get your NVIDIA card.
I'm the same way. I think the same way. To me, it was one of those things where the benefit was not enough to outweigh the hassle. I have a hard time just finding my remote control.
Yeah, much less these glasses laying around. And, you know, the 4K televisions are so nice. The picture quality is so nice. It almost gives a feeling of 3D because you honestly look like you could just reach right in and grab whatever's on the screen.
That's true. That's so many people have described it as being 3D-like. I mean, even Wally Pfister, the cinematographer I got to talk to, he said, when you get to this level of clarity, that's essentially 3D. You get the illusion of depth. I mean, nothing is coming out at you, but everything looks like it has real presence. Like you could, like it is just a pane of glass between you and the Hobbit or whatever.
Right. Right. It's just like in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, where all of a sudden that was, that the candy bar was there and it looked real. And then they reached out and grabbed it. It's like, it feels like that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And then Mike TV, of course, following along. And we could have a whole discussion just on Willy Wonka, and I'm somewhat tempted to because CES is exhausting. But 4K TVs, that's definitely one of the big themes that went through this year. Every major television producer was putting their 4K sets on display.
Yeah.
And all of them, of course, claiming that their sets are more better than everyone else's.
I put some 4K in my 4K so you can 4K while you 4K.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I was there and one of the things that I saw beyond the 4K was beyond 4K.
People
were already talking about the next generation, whether that is
quantum dots.
Yep. Using the quantum dot approach and trying to get to a point where we've got 8K resolution. And I know a lot of people might be saying, like, that sounds crazy because we don't really have that much 4K content yet, except on sites like YouTube or Netflix. But the truth is that Japan is going to try and start broadcasting 8K signals by the end of 2016.
Yeah, yeah. So the other thing is like, maybe this is sort of, maybe this is kind of like a jump between, 720 and 1080.
Yeah.
So it's like maybe 4K is the 720 of this generation.
Right. Right. It's one of those things where, again, the other part of this is that it allows us to have larger screens without depreciating the quality of the image on those screens.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get to a point where the manufacturing costs are low and we see the prices of the television sets come down as well as adoption rates go up, it means that we can all create that crazy home theater experience that normally only hip hop artists were able to do. So
yeah, yeah. Or, Bill Gates.
Yeah.
So, which is super nice. I mean, just there have been so many great advances in how we consume content over the last even, 5 years. It blows my mind that the iPad is just 5 years old. In February.
Yeah.
That's always the thing that kind of reminds me that it's been so much so fast.
Right. I mean, I made a prediction, a famous prediction just the year before the iPad came out, that if it did come out, it was going to fail. So it just shows how I have my finger on the pulse of technology.
Well, sometimes we have to fail to move forward.
That's true. And also, to be fair, no tablet in the history of tablets
had ever been popular or gained any kind of mainstream acceptance. And then, of course, when the name came out, people were, just regarded that with lots of derision. Oh,
sure.
The iPad, how stupid.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, we were all proven wrong on that one.
I'm okay with that because it's led to an interesting world, especially really pushed the development of mobile applications and mobile devices. And also, I would argue that the success of the tablet and the rise of the mobile device also gave rise to another big trend at CES 2015, wearables.
Oh, man, there were so many. They had wearables for dogs.
Like, they did.
I could not believe. We barely scratched the surface on human wearables. Now we got dog wearables.
Yeah.
So bizarre.
I love that we're seeing lots of experimentation in this. I mean, I think where you see the maturity as far as wearables go, is in the health and fitness field, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's where they really got their start. I'm wearing a fitness tracker right now because, I mean, I'm a sheep. Also, I really like them. I think it's really cool. I love the idea of quantifying my activity so that I can look at and make an assessment as to whether or not I'm doing well, or maybe I need to push myself harder. I always need to push myself harder, by the way. but that's definitely the realm where we're really seeing wearables take off. Now, granted, in 2015, I don't know, did you ever get over to the Sands Convention Center?
You know, I was so bummed. I did not make it over to Tech West. So for anybody listening, CES has just continued to grow exponentially. And there was I remember a few years ago, there was a point where Microsoft decided they weren't coming anymore. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people started predicting like, oh, this is the death of CES. Like it's going to start getting smaller and we're going to have these, you know, one-off events like Samsung and Apple do. Everyone's going to start doing those. There's no point now. And completely the opposite of that. I mean, it has grown exponentially in the last few years to the point where now all of the startups and all of the weird kind of quirky stuff, 3D printing and drones and just all kinds of things are over in the Sands Convention Center. So they're using the Las Vegas Convention Center, Mandalay Bay, the Sands, the Venetian. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah. And there's also some companies that'll set up in suites and hotels around the space because they don't necessarily want to dish out the money they would need to put down to have a booth.
Right. Well, maybe they don't even need a booth. Maybe they just say, well, we just want to invite select members of the press and industry buyers to come to our suite and see what we have happening.
That's true. I did get a chance to experience the Nintendo Wii U for in one of those meetings. It was before they had really started to unveil it and had just only talked about it a little bit to the press.
Oh man.
And so it was a couple of years ago when I got to do that. But that's, you know, that was a rare event for me. Usually I'm not on those lists. I'm not sure how I got on that one, but it was awesome.
I need to find out how to get on those lists. There's some sort of secret society that I need to find out how to get it, like the Skulls, but it's like for tech. I need to figure out how to get into that.
Yeah, I'm usually only invited to the ones like, here's a new thumb drive. Well, this is useful. Yeah. I mean, I'm not gonna poo-poo your thumb drive.
But we made these computer cases and they're super fascinating. You should come see them.
Here's a smartphone case for a brand that you don't own. Well, thanks. Fantastic. But getting back to the wearables, some of the crazy ones I saw, I went to CES Unveiled and I saw the Belty. Did you
see
Belty?
Everybody loved Belty this year.
I think Belty was this year's haptic feedback fork.
Oh, yeah, the happy fork. Yeah, there's a happy knife now, too, if you didn't see that. There's happy fork and happy spoon or knife or I don't know, whatever it is. Yeah. So ridiculous.
Yeah, these are some of the more kind of quirky things.
Very obscure. The ring. There was a ring, a really bulky ring with a little button in the bottom corner that you press and you could gesture and things like that. It's very strange.
Yeah, the ring is one of those. From what I understand, it had a very contentious Kickstarter campaign. One of those where it got funded and then it was a really long delay between when the funding happened and when anything else was happening. I can kind of sympathize with people who back the ring because I have backed two different smartwatches and one regular but cool watch, and none of the three have been finished yet. So, and that was more than a year ago when I backed them. So I totally get it, but
I think it's definitely like one of those situations where, so a good example of this is Indiegogo had a very controversial crowdfund called the Heelbee. I don't know if you're familiar with this.
This one I'm not familiar with.
This is the one that claims that it can measure your glucose based on like your skin. Like it's so weird. Like sweat can measure your glucose. This has been kind of a holy grail in diabetes technology, blood sugar level, healthcare forever. And this company is owned by like a Russian cake shop owner. It's all very shady. The whole thing is very, very shady.
Yeah.
And all of the science having to do with this is like kind of bad, shaky science that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So I think, and they raised, you know, over $1 million and it's so, I mean, for me, it seems so clearly a ripoff, but a scam, but I just don't know. And they were at CES and they were like, oh yeah, here's our device, but you can't use it. This is just what it looks like.
Yeah. I've seen some of that. Like, it's really interesting that that's the world we're in now, because again, kind of a look back at what it's like to go to CES.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, the only companies that you would see at CES, if you were in the main convention center, you would see lots of big name companies and maybe a few distributors as well. But those would be the only ones you'd see. If you go to the Venetians and Sands, you'd see smaller companies, or you were interested in audio hardware, which mm-hmm. was often featured at the Venetian, where you would go to a suite and they had more control over the environment because it's very noisy at CES.
True.
So it's hard to set up like a high fidelity experience on the CES floor.
Right.
But you didn't see a lot of independents out there. You saw, you know, there were areas where there'd be lots of tiny companies that had very small booths and they would just be jam packed. Usually ones, a lot of them from Asia, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But these days, now we're in the era of crowdfunding, where we're seeing independent projects that have crowdfunding backing. They don't have like the backing of a giant corporation.
Yeah.
Actually have a significant presence at CES, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I almost wonder, you know, it's like, especially with the crowdfund, it's like, are you using the money that we just gave you for a booth? Like,
right.
I have concerns here, like, especially the ones that are just have these like giant booths and you're just like, you know, I gave you $100 to give me, you know, whatever. And now you're here with, you know, a skateboarding ramp and, you know, confetti cannons and t-shirt yeah. guns. And I'm a little concerned about where my Kickstarter funds are going to.
Yeah. I might be like, you're not such a great tech company, but you're an amazing marketing company.
Yeah, exactly. And I just, yeah, it's very weird to sort of see, but Tech West was really cool because it was a lot of those companies. So a lot of, hey, we were on Kickstarter, like 3Doodler was there. Mm-hmm. And they had a successful Kickstarter. They unveiled the newest like version of their 3D pen, their 3D printing pen, which looks a lot better than the original first gen version, which is really cool. But yeah, it was really, I always like going to CES and seeing those, which is like the success story. So you're like, gosh, like, okay, there they are. Like I backed this on Kickstarter, or I saw this on Kickstarter and I told my friends about it. And now they're a successful company and they're super excited to be here.
Right.
They love being there and they like being in the position that they're in because they have a little bit of name recognition, which is always nice. But then on that same note, they're still, you know, fresh and they have stars in their eyes about, you know, making it big. And it's just, they're so enthusiastic about being there. And that's one of the things I really love about CES is, especially over in Tech West now, there's so much enthusiasm and so much excitement over there. I mean, that place was buzzing all week long.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
I spent most of my time there. And so I got to see a lot of these little companies. There were some big companies over in Tech West as well, because that was where they put some of their zones. CES will also create zones that have related products kind of grouped together to make it mm-hmm. easier to see them.
That was really smart.
It is really smart. It doesn't work for the big companies because they're just too big. They don't want to split up their presence. Mm-hmm. So like for wearables, for example, one guy I ran into had this great saying. He essentially said, everyone here has a wearable. Every booth here has got something in it that's going to be a wearable or it's going to be used in wearables. You know, it's pretty much true.
Right.
So you could go to the big booths and see examples of that, but you could also go to Tech West and see companies that were specifically oriented around a particular product or a group of products. Same sort of thing with 3D printing. That was huge over at Tech West.
And, really big.
You know, one of the most impressive displays of 3D printing. It's been a long time coming. I mean, I remember when I went to my first CES, or maybe it was even my second one, I saw a MakerBot for the first time, and it was one of the early, early models. And I think it was the only 3D printer that was on the floor that year, and it really blew me away. And now there's just an entire section of Tech West dedicated to it.
Full-on section. They had not only, you know, 3D printed jewelry and 3D printed objects, toys, things like that, but they also had 3D printed food. Which it's like 3D printed chocolate and 3D printed candies. And that just blows my mind. I mean,
they, They also, they had the full 3D scanner where you could go in, scan yourself, and get a printout of yourself.
I know. It's so great.
It was tough for me because I showed up and they looked at me and said, we don't have enough plastic. So I just turned around and walked away.
Aw, wah, sad. Wah.
But then I went straight to the fitness trackers and they said, we can help you.
So don't worry. We got you covered, John.
It's all okay.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Another big trend, obviously, one of the things that you see a lot of at CES, which is kind of funny considering that it comes so close to the giant auto show that happens in Detroit, is there's a lot of car technology on display. And this year, one of the big ones I covered for Forward Thinking, the announcement that Toyota has released all of its fuel cell vehicle patents, more than 5,600 of them worldwide, to be use royalty-free, license-free.
So great.
Yeah, it's absolutely a brilliant, savvy move on the part of Toyota for multiple reasons. One is that if you want to bring around a world where hydrogen is a legitimate fuel source for vehicles, you can't depend on one company to make that change. It's right. Just too big.
You can't hoard all your ideas.
Right. And, you know, a lot of people have pointed out Elon Musk did something very similar by releasing the patents related to the Tesla. Mm-hmm. And that, too, was a really brilliant move. In my mind, it's great to have both of these technologies moving forward. I mean, in many ways, they're competing. But if you look at a battery operated vehicle and a fuel cell operated vehicle, they're both electric cars. It's just one is getting its electricity from a stored chemical stored battery. Another one is getting its electricity from a hydrogen fuel cell.
Right.
And it's good to have both. It may be that in the long run, one ends up winning over the other. But I think having both is incredibly beneficial, particularly if we maintain the demand that the electricity that is going to power our vehicles ultimately comes from a clean source. That's the big challenge with both of those types of technologies.
Right. Well, and especially with gas prices coming down quite a bit, I believe I read they started selling the Hummer again.
Yes.
So, which is a little disappointing, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's sort of one of those things where it's a challenge. It's always a challenge because when gas is inexpensive, people don't think about needing economical cars or clean cars. And so if I'm not mistaken, the reason why the Volkswagen Beetle was so popular in the 70s was because of the gas shortages. So people mm-hmm. needed these like economical cars. They stopped driving those giant boats that we remember from the 50s and the 60s. And they started moving towards smaller cars. So that's how we kind of started getting smaller cars. And now we're moving towards these sort of eco-friendly vehicles, you know, emission free and all this great stuff. And there was so much awesome stuff that I saw at CES that had to do with vehicles. I mean, the concept car for Mercedes.
The F015
was unbelievable.
It looks like it's something out of a science fiction film.
It looks like it came right out of Minority Report. You just get in. It's got these four captain's chairs. You could swing around 360 degrees. It's self-driving. I mean, and of course, you know, they're like, this is for 2030. You know, this is
yeah.
We're way out in the future. But I mean, it's okay. I think of it this way. I remember 2000 like it was yesterday. So it's 2015 now. That's another 15 years of like, I feel like it's going to be here like tomorrow.
Yeah, I am perfectly on board with the autonomous car revolution. Yeah, that was one of those concepts. I saw the pictures afterwards. I never made it out to the North Hall, which kills me because I wanted to do a walkthrough and really see the North Hall, by the way, is where all the automakers have their booths. You tend to have major automakers have booths there, and then all the like super loud, boomy bass stereo companies have their
booths. And a whole bunch of like phone accessories.
Yeah, because that's exactly where you want to show off your phone accessories, next to the gigantic wall of sound that's just playing bass at you.
Yeah, of course.
One thing I didn't see a lot of this year, but again, it could just be that I didn't have a chance to really walk the floor, but I'm hopeful that perhaps I'm right. I didn't see a lot of booth babes.
There weren't, you know, there's a list going around after the show was over. I don't know if you saw it. It was a list of companies that had them. And I want to say none of the major companies had them at all, which was really, that made me very happy.
Yeah. So booth babes, for those who don't know, these are women who are hired to try and entice people into a booth. Usually they typically are dressed in revealing or sassy or sexy clothing of some sort.
Yeah.
And they tend to be, kind of treated as like this is an added decoration to our booth.
It is like a decorate. It's really depressing.
It really is. I sat next to a lady who fulfilled such a role on a bus, a shuttle bus once, and we had a really good conversation, and she was genuinely an interesting person, and it hurt me because I thought she doesn't have any opportunity to actually engage in meaningful conversation because that's not what her role is, and I'm glad to see that trend is starting to fade away.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad that it's finally people are starting to realize like it's much better to have knowledgeable people in the booth because most of the people there, are not, especially in Vegas, it's like, it sounds weird, but it's like, they're not there to pick up chicks, you know? It's like, it's, that's fine. And that's, you know, if you want, if you think that'll bring people into your booth, like whatever, but what are you going to do when none of them can talk intelligently about your product? Like then they just leave. So they get their picture and they leave. And it's just, it's kind of that fast food sort of feeling of content, like at a booth. You go to a booth and they might draw you in with something, but if somebody can't actually talk to you about a product, you know, you're going to leave. You're going to get, get a quick picture of whatever it is that you were looking at, whether it's a person or some gimmick, you know, whatever. And then you're going to split because nobody there can actually tell you about anything. So I'm really glad to see that they're really going out of their way. Like at LG, everybody was so knowledgeable and well trained, and they knew exactly where to direct you if you weren't sure about something or if you had questions. I mean, they were very good. Like I was very impressed with LG. I mean, all the big ones, Sony, Samsung. Yeah. I mean, they're all very, very good.
Intel.
Intel's booth was really great. I mean, all of the major players had a lot of super knowledgeable people who were friendly and also just really had an enthusiasm for the product that they were discussing or whatever they were assigned to talk about. So that was great. It was really nice to see that.
Yeah, that's nice. I mean, it may sound to my listeners here that we're crowing about something really simple, but here's the thing. It's not always like that at CES.
No.
There are times where you go there and the person who you're talking to clearly doesn't know. They might know like a tiny laundry list of features that the product has, but they can't really answer any deeper questions or...
Right.
Or
they'll get a little list. They'll hire people who do that for a living. I mean, it's at booth guys or girls, and then they don't really train them deeply on product. They just say, here are the main bullet points hit, and here's a real quick overview of how the product works. Well, the problem with that is some people really take that to heart, and you can always get some really good people who have been hired in and who've been just trained for, you know, half a day on a product, who are really into it and they're excited about it. But then you also can get the people who are not, who are just, you know, there for a paycheck and they say, well, oh, and here's the phone or here's the TV or the washer and dryer, or whatever it is. And they're like, yeah, it's really nice. And that's it. That's all you get. Cause they didn't bother paying attention during training.
Right. Right. Another big kind of, theme that was running through. This is one that I am really excited about while also I get a little nauseated by it's virtual reality.
Oh, so good.
I love virtual reality. I love it in concept. In practice, there are times where I definitely get a little loopy and feel a little weird. I think that my main disconnect is if I play anything that has a first person perspective, and it has a very convincing immersive world, and I turn my head and everything is fine. That's cool. The problem I get is as soon as I start to move, if I have to use a controller to move, then the disconnect from using the controller versus my head looking around as if I'm standing up, because my body is staying still, but the input I'm getting through my eyes and my ears is that I'm moving. That's when my stomach says, okay, listen, I got to take a quick break here.
Yeah. You're like,
and
whoa,
reconsider
whoa, whoa.
Things. Yeah.
Yeah. There was, you know, there was a lot of virtual reality at the show this year. So not only was Oculus there with a huge booth, I might add.
Yeah. I guess getting bought by Facebook gave them a little bit of spending money.
Well, spending cash. Yeah.
Yeah.
They had a huge booth full of great demos. Fantastic demos with the newest version of the Rift headset. So the, Crescent Bay. Is that the newest one? It's like Crystal Cove, Crescent Bay. So Crescent Bay is the one with the headset. So 3D sound as well as the actual virtual reality headset. It was so good. So fantastic. And then Razer came out with OS VR. So open source virtual reality, including a headset and also just software. So you don't have to use the headset with the software, vice versa. You could use one or the other or both. I thought that was fantastic. A lot of open sourcing has been happening recently, which makes me very happy. And then we saw, you know, we know that Sony's working on Project Morpheus, wasn't at CES, but it exists. And then Samsung's got their, Milk VR, which is sort of a separate service. And then they have the, Gear VR, which is the headset that you can use with a Note 3 or a Note Edge, the Galaxy Note Edge.
Yeah. They also had that on display at the Oculus booth. If you weren't willing to wait in a very long line to try out the Rift, you could just wait in the very short line to try out the Samsung one.
Yeah.
Which is what I did because I was on a schedule. But yeah, seeing that this is finally becoming something that's actually within the realm of the consumer reach is really exciting. I mean, I remember the era when the term virtual reality was first bandied about in the late 80s, early 90s. And I remember the backlash that the industry suffered when it didn't quite measure up to our expectations. When we thought we'd be plunged into a digital world and it turned out we would be shooting a polydactyl monster.
Yeah. I remember those at like the county fair.
Yeah.
Where you'd go and you'd pay like $5 or 10 bucks and then you got 5 minutes inside this VR sort of, it was like a little platform that had corners and then you put on the headset. It was very weird and also very terrible.
Yeah, the headset was suspended by cables because it was too heavy to just put on someone's head. And we used to have one of those at our local mall. And you would pay for a 5 minute experience. And if you were to pay for more than 5 minutes, you were either a glutton for punishment or you had an iron stomach.
And also everybody in the line hated you because it was everybody. There was always a huge line.
Right. Because it was the new thing. Well, now that new thing is finally getting to a point where we can actually see a time when we'll have it in our own homes.
Mm-hmm.
And, obviously there are a lot of people out there who have the developer kits who have been playing around with it for a while. I didn't do that because my philosophy is that developer kits are primarily for developers and I should wait. Because I want to have the experience that's going to be most suited for consumers as possible. I say that. I'm also the owner of a pair of Google Glass, so apparently I can't always hold myself to that. But it was great seeing that kind of stuff on display and seeing it so close to being a mainstream product. One of my favorite things that I encountered, I didn't get to visit them when they had it all set up, but I actually ran into the team that was behind it while I was on the plane going to CES was a company, a little group called Serenetti. And Serenetti had created a cooking robot. I told you about this when we met up at CES.
Right. Yeah.
So the idea behind this is that you've got a robot that can stir and cook food. It's got a robotic arm that can actually rotate and stir the food properly, specifically meant for lots of different types of stuff like pho or pad thai, that kind of thing. And all you do is you put the ingredients in the robot and the robot adds the ingredients at the right time. It continues to look after the food as it's cooking, does it all automated. So it cooks your whole meal for you. And what I thought was brilliant about this approach was that as I was talking to the creators, they were mentioning that their business plan wasn't to just sell the robot, that if that were all it was, then that would be a real challenge. Their business plan is to set up a subscription-based service where you subscribe to get meals that the robot can cook. So you get the ingredients, you load the ingredients into the robot cooks your meal, and what you're paying for really is the subscription to the food service. And these are high school students.
Genius. What are we doing with our lives?
I don't know, Ashley. They're going to be millionaires.
It's like Blue Apron with a robot. It's great.
I could add two of those kids together and they still wouldn't be as old as I am.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be millionaires.
I feel so deeply unsuccessful when I hear about these stories. I'm just like, well, it was a good try. Like,
right. Had a good run.
Yeah. Had a good run. I'm just going to give up.
Yep. If you need me, I'll be in the bar.
If you need me, I'll be in the bar while my robot makes my dinner.
Yeah.
So I'll be doing that.
My bartender is drinking next to me because he's out of a job now.
Yeah, because the robot is making us both drinks and making us dinner.
Yeah, there were some other things that were on display at CES that got some buzz. There was a computer from HP, the HP Stream Mini, which is this tiny little $180 computer that just has basic outputs that looks like it's going to be, a super desktop killer for a lot of consumers who just want to have your basic PC operations. They don't necessarily want to have it as, this will be like their home computer that lives at home as opposed to a laptop. I really like the design of it. I didn't get a chance to play with it at all, but I thought that was interesting. I thought the fact that Parrot has an in-dash system.
Oh, I loved that.
It was
RNB6.
Yes.
It was really nice.
Yeah. This is a company that I almost always associate with their drones and their robots,
mm-hmm.
but they do have an entirely separate branch that develops technology like this. So yeah, this is an in-dash operating system.
How they called it, an infotainment system.
Yeah. And it includes the various apps, the phone app and music apps, things like that. Dash cam control. It's really cool. I'm curious how distracting it is to a driver who's wanting to operate such a thing, but it is pretty neat.
They did say it would be compatible with both CarPlay and Android Auto.
Oh, cool.
So you'll be able to interact regardless of whether you have iOS or Android. You'll be able to interact with it by voice. So Siri, you'll be able to give Siri commands, or Android Auto, you'll be able to talk to Google Now, which I think is great. And honestly, I don't know why any automaker or even third party company would make any in-dash anything that is not cross-platform compatible.
Right. Don't take that proprietary approach where you're trying to lock people into one ecosystem, because that's just a recipe for failure.
Well, cars are such a long-term commitment for most people that it doesn't make any sense to do it that way. Because what if you switch from iOS to Android? Or what if, you upgrade next year and your Android phone isn't supported by that in-dash system? Like, it doesn't, anything that, it's a much better idea. I was just talking about this to somebody who was very excited about cross-platform because of that. He likes to switch back and forth between iOS and Android. So, which I would find incredibly nerve-wracking and anxiety-inducing, but he loves it. And so for him, he's like, this is great because I don't have to feel like I'm locked into a certain type of phone while I own this car.
Right. Yeah, this is the same argument I make for all the smart appliances that only will talk to other smart appliances from mm-hmm. that same company. I totally get it. I totally understand why manufacturers do this, but it's not a great experience for consumers, because it means that we are locked into one manufacturer's form of appliances. Even if we really like one, but we would prefer a different manufacturer for something else. Like, oh, I love the dishwasher from this company, but I really like the washer and dryer from this other company.
Mm-hmm.
But I want all my stuff to talk to each other. It's really challenging. We've got a lot of companies that are trying to come out with platforms that can allow for some cross communication. That it requires a lot of jerry-rigging, really, to make sure that things that are designed to speak with one language can talk to something that's designed to speak with a different language. That being said, the smart home was another huge trend at CES this year. Probably the biggest I've ever seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. Every year, smart home just gets crazy. Home automation is, oh boy, it's going to be nuts in the next maybe 5 years or so, because it's going to be kind of an arms race between all these companies, as you were just saying, to like not necessarily lock you into an ecosystem, but to make products that you're going to want to buy over anything else.
Right. Yeah. And we've seen this really change dramatically over the years. It wasn't that long ago when you could do home automation, but it meant spending a huge amount of money getting contractors in there. There were very specific companies that were in the business, and they were not necessarily name brands that the average consumer would be aware of, because mm-hmm. it's a very niche market. And now you've got big companies that are offering up all sorts of components. Some of them are offering up entire systems, so it'll affect multiple things in your house, like your locks and your lights, your windows, climate control, all that kind of stuff. There are other ones that are their focus is on a specific piece of that, but they can work within a larger network. It's an exciting time, because now, again, the average consumer can actually look into it. And if you're only interested in automating your locks, you could totally do that. Like, you don't have to go and invest in a $10,000 renovation of your home to get it automated. Now
right.
you can get these bits and pieces. I have internet controllable lights, so I could turn my lights on anywhere in the world. It's amazing. But that was one of those things that I got from CES 2 years ago. And that was an early implementation of it. Now we're starting to see things like the Hue lights, which give you way more options than what I had.
Yeah.
But it's exciting because now we've got like the Internet of Things has become something more than just a buzzword. We're actually starting to see some examples of that. What I'm really excited to see is after that 5 years of craziness that you're talking about, seeing the software side reaching a point where our houses are no longer waiting for us to send a command to them in order for them to do something like dim the lights or adjust the climate control. Our houses will be anticipating what our needs are before we're even aware of it.
Right.
And adjusting themselves for us so that we can live in Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah. And well, we've already seen a little bit of that with like Nest. So it learns your patterns. It kind of knows, you know, when you come home and when you need, you know, when you get up. And there's, yep. I know there's a lot of interconnectivity with Android Home, and also, HomeKit, which is iOS. They like one of the examples they had given was, okay, so you have your, you know, your wearable. And when you wake up, it realizes you wake up and then it sends a message to your thermostat to like turn up the heat. Mm-hmm. And so I think that'll kind of be, it's sort of, like I hate the phrase, but Internet of Things, like it definitely is that. That's what I always think of when I think of Internet of Things. It's just all of these different devices and gadgets and installations working together to sort of make your life more comfortable without you even needing to tell it to do so, right. Which is always my favorite part of technology. I mean, if I could have anything in the world, it would be, you know, my question is, when will we live the Jetsons? And so this kind of stuff always is very reminiscent for me of the Jetsons and, oh man, like finally someday I'm going to be able to like get on a conveyor belt and it's going to dress me and brush my teeth, wash my hair and style it for me. And then Rosie the Robot's going to have my breakfast ready to go.
I want to live in that world, although the styling of the hair sounds particularly painful in my case.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that would work so well. But other than
that...
Well,
they just put a beautiful sheen. They just wax it a little bit send you out in the world.
Little polish to the dome.
It's just like when you brush your teeth and you get that little like bing in the commercials.
Right.
It'd be the same. It'd be the same as that.
Right. I'll just, you know, it's me and Mr. Clean all the way.
Mm-hmm.
I want to live in that world. I want to get to that point. I think we're definitely going to see a lot more examples of competing standards. It's going to be a messy, messy, 5 years. Like it's not going to be smooth sailing the whole time. I think it's going to be worthwhile once we get to the other side of that. But it does mean that we're going to have some time to really, you know, slog through some unpleasantness, I think, in the short term.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
Came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Ashley, was there anything at CES that you saw? You know, I've only brought up some broad categories, but was there anything you saw that really you just thought, now that's either crazy or that's awesome or crazy awesome or anything like that?
One thing in particular, there were two things in particular that I really liked, which was the first one was at Panasonic. They have this beauty bar, like mirror. I keep calling it the magic mirror. They have this mirror where you would sit down and it would scan your face and tell you, oh, you look dehydrated, or these, you know, you have bags under your eyes. You need to like supplement your diet with these things to like help your skin be better. And then you are able to actually do in real time. Cause you would see this like sort of smaller reflection of yourself in the mirror. You were able to see, makeup and facial hair. And it was just very well done. The facial tracking was unbelievable.
I really wish I had seen that. I also would love to, if I were designing that, I would definitely go with like the stereotypical, overbearing mother as voice.
I do GLaDOS.
You're not drinking enough water.
Oh, see, I'd go with GLaDOS, where she just insults you at every turn. It's just, that, you know.
That also would be effective.
So there was that, and I loved that, and that was great. We have a couple of videos about that on CNET. And then there was the other thing that I really enjoyed, which definitely was it had no purpose other than having people see it and go, oh, like,
I think,
wow.
I know where you're going with this.
Which is the flexible television. Did you see this?
Oh, that was not what I thought you were going to say.
Yes. There was a LG, and I think one or two other booths had flexible TVs, but LG in particular was the one that I saw. They had a TV that would flex from flat to curved. And it was a 4K TV. It was stunning. It was just so weird and cool. And you just looked at it and everybody, I had to do tours at CES. So I was taking through these groups of tours and that was the thing where everybody just went, oh, like, wow. It was that moment.
Yeah. Whenever I've led a tour myself in the past and whenever you have to do this sort of thing, whenever you get the chance to lead people on a tour, there does become this moment of, I have got to find the one breathtaking thing on this floor so that if all else fails, there'll be that moment. And if I can end as close as I can to that, everyone will think it's the most amazing tour ever.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm giving away our secrets here. No, the thing I thought you were going to say, so I was totally wrong, but what I thought you were going to say was the Intel spider dress.
Oh, see, I loved that too. It had no purpose beyond just looking really cool.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, first of all, I can't believe you didn't see any news on this because it was one of those things that was so eye-catching. It did exactly what it was supposed to do, which is it drew attention and it got people talking about it. But it was a 3D printed dress, as I recall, is like an outfit that had actuators that had these little spider arms at the shoulders. Mm-hmm. They look like spider appendages that could extend outward and look all scary-ish.
Literally looked like a loot drop from World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Like, it looked like, you know, tier three Shadow Priest shoulders. That was exactly what it looked like. It was so cool. It was all white. And then they had these glowing kind of nodules in there. And then they had proximity sensors in the chest area. So as soon as somebody would get close, these actuators would like lash out and keep people at bay. And then, as soon as people backed away, the actuators would relax and kind of retract in and calm down. And, man, it was just so cool. It was more of a, like a bodice with a silver skirt. But the bodice and the shoulders were all 3D printed and it was run off the Intel Edison chip. And it was so, so cool to see in person.
Yeah. It looked to me like H.R. Geiger and a Parisian fashion consultant had drinks and thought, hey, wouldn't this be cool? Yeah, it was really, really arresting, kind of design. You definitely need to go check it out. If you have not seen it, just do a search for Intel Spider dress. It'll pop right up. It was really, and of course the models that they had wearing it, they had their hair swept up in a very dramatic updo that made it look very sci-fi. And I fully approved of it because I thought, well, this feels like I'm in a deleted scene of Dune or something. It was fantastic.
I loved it. It was so cool to see.
So for those people who have not been to CES, how many times have you gone, Ashley?
This is my fifth year.
Okay, it was my eighth year. So can you put into words what it feels like on that last day when you've just finished your last appointment or last... the last thing that you had to do before you are done with CES.
It's like going on a Vegas bender, except instead of getting wasted on alcohol and partying, you're wasted on technology and exhaustion. That's exactly what CES is like.
I don't know how I managed to do it this year, but somehow I actually managed to avoid catching the CES crud that goes around usually.
I did not catch it either, and I was very happy about that.
I think this is the first year where I didn't feel like I had a cold for the week following CES. I mean, you just come into contact with so many people, and the show is so huge. It's hard to explain to someone who has never been how big this is, but the Las Vegas Convention Center it's like nearly 2 million square feet just for the convention center.
Right.
And then you've got the other places like the Venetian, the Sands, just getting from place to place.
Yeah.
There's a lot of walking.
I explain to people this. I say, so you know how gross your phone is? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, you're pretty much the only person who touches your phone and it's disgusting. And they say, yeah. I'm like, now imagine handling a phone that's been touched by 40,000 people in the last 5 hours.
Right.
That's how people get sick at CES.
Yeah.
So my advice to people who always go to any convention where you're touching stuff, controllers like E3, controllers or devices or anything that has to do with human touch or people are around it a lot, always wash your hands the second you leave a booth. I always tell people, like, the second you leave a booth, just go wash your hands. It's a 2-minute detour and literally makes the difference between not getting sick and getting really, really sick.
Yeah. The weird thing about CES is it's one of those conventions where there's a line for the men's room, but not for the ladies.
That's my favorite part. That's what I like about being a nerd in technology is whenever I go to a convention, there's never a line in the bathroom.
Well,
why do you think I got into this industry?
I was just about to say, like, it's good that you are able to identify the real positives of a particular career path, so readily, because I didn't give any thought to that. And then there I am stuck in line. This was a fun conversation, Ashley. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. Just to kind of give an overview of what CES 2015 was like. I know we didn't dive into a lot of different product details, but really I just wanted to kind of give listeners an idea of what the general tone was, what it was like. It seemed pretty together this year. I didn't have any problems. It seemed like everything seemed to run fairly smoothly from my perspective, which was nice. I didn't have any issues checking in anywhere. I got, you know, everyone seemed to get through things. I did make the mistake once again of getting between the press and free food, which you would think no. At this point I would be able to avoid, but
don't ever do that. You'll lose your arm.
Yeah. Sometimes you just
chew it right off.
I just don't have enough peripheral vision. So sometimes I think I'm safe. And the next thing you know, I'm right in front of a buffet table and it's game over.
Oh, that was at that was at Unveiled for sure. I remember that very well. They made this terrible mistake of putting this dessert buffet table right in the middle of a very small corridor with a lot of startup stuff in it. So journalists were like rushing the table. Not a lot of things were being covered in that area, but it was just, it was a real mess.
Yeah, that particular area was where some of the really kind of niche, weird stuff was sitting. And just imagine that you've got this narrow sort of hallway area of a larger room. Like the bigger part of the room is just behind you. And you're in this narrow hallway, the center of which is dominated by a table covered in food, surrounded by piranha-like press members.
Yeah, who are starving.
And all you want to do is get to the end of that hallway, do a loop, and come back. Because there's no exit out that side.
Yeah.
You are committed once
you go
down that way.
Yeah, it was really depressing.
Yeah. So, but we survived once again.
We
lived to fight, another CES.
And we didn't even get sick.
We didn't even get sick. Yeah. I don't even know why I'm complaining. I'm just being ridiculous. Ashley, where can people go to find your work?
Well, I am always on Twitter. So I'm a big social media person and Twitter is my number one social media network. So I'm at Ashley Esqueda there. And then if you want to see the Daily Geek talk show that I host with Kale Anonymous, it's called Tomorrow Daily. And you can actually, instead of going to CNET and kind of looking through all the different categories, which can be a little tough to find, you can go very easily to tomorrowdaily.com and it will take you right to our show page. And if you want to check us out on YouTube, you can do that too. We're on the CNET channel there. And of course, iTunes and we do a video version of the podcast as well. It's audio or video. We film it every day, Monday through Thursday. It's a great time. We have a lot of fun. I'm all about positivity just basically leaving with a smile on your face. So if you've left and you had a good time after watching the show, that's mission accomplished for us. So come have fun with us. It's tomorrowdaily.com and feel free to drop me a line on Twitter.
Awesome. And Ashley really is a great person. She had me on a show a very long time ago. This has been a long time coming, having her on Tech Stuff. One of the sharpest people I know in tech journalism. I always love talking to you. Thank you again. And guys, if you have any questions or you have suggestions for future episodes, you can always reach me, techstuff@howstuffworks.com, or drop me a line on Facebook or Twitter. The handle there is techstuff, HSW. And we'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.